record.
So, yeah, we're glad everyone is here tonight. And we're having very wonderful warm weather here, which is why we're outside. But we're glad you're here. And it seems like people are still joining. So that's great.
And what we're going to talk about tonight is the question of blocks to love. And we're going to talk about it from with an emphasis on single women, because we find that that's often the majority of who comes. So we're going to talk about blocks to finding the love that you want. But I think a lot of what we're talking about is equally applicable when you're in a relationship, because a lot of us actually have blocks to receiving what we want as well. And I guess we should talk about who we are first.
Yeah, so I'm Michelle.
And I'm Ruth. Many of you know us.
Yes.
But for those that don't, for those that are new, we're very glad that you're here. And we are partners, and we're married, and we love each other a lot.
Yes.
And we founded Conscious Girlfriend several years ago now to help lesbians and queer women date wisely and love well, because both of us traveled a pretty long, winding road in our own lives with a lot of difficult relationships and pain and breakups before we really figured out how to have the kind of relationship that we had wanted all along. And so we really founded Conscious Girlfriend to help you get to whatever it is that you want, hopefully more easily and smoothly.
Yeah. And we like to say that we combine science, spirituality, and psychology, and we weave those together. And we've actually been doing a lot of cool, you hear some of it, a lot of cool research and stuff on brain science, the newer revolutionary brain science. So we love to talk about that.
Yeah. Actually, Michelle is the one with the background in neuroscience. She actually has a PhD in neuroscience. But I have become completely fascinated by it. And so I recently ordered about 10 books, and I've been like reading everything I can about neuroplasticity. And it's really cool because I also am a hypnotherapist and I do shamanic work. And so I've done some more esoteric kinds of therapies. And as some of you may know, a lot of the kinds of things that more spiritually oriented, growth oriented people and, that spiritual teachers have actually been teaching for centuries is actually now being borne out by neuroscience research. In other words, they can do functional MRIs, brain scans, and actually show the areas of the brain that change with some of the kinds of tools that we teach and that many spiritual teachers have taught for a long time. Like many of you that have been working with us for a while are already familiar with the Metta practice, for instance. And there actually are literal studies now that show what Metta does to your brain.
Yep.
So it's very cool. And so we love to bring in, this isn't just a pep talk or a positivity rally, although, we do some of that. But this is really a proven brain science-based approach to creating the love life that you want, finding the love you want, and being able to maintain it.
And, we hear from a lot of women who say to us, well, I just don't know how to find her. I've been trying, I've been doing this, I've been on dating sites, I've been, doing all sorts of things, but I just don't know how to find her. And what we've learned is that there's often other things in the way. It's not just about not being able to find her out there.
And often, actually, what people say is not so much, I don't know how to find her, but they say, she's not out there. Or maybe I'm not meant to have the kind of relationship I want. Maybe there's just something wrong with me that would keep me from it. There's something that's not lovable about me. I'm just too unusual. I'm too old. I'm too young. I'm too fat. I'm too thin. I'm too, I have too many health problems. I don't know if I've ever heard anybody say I don't have enough health problems, but I suppose somebody out there might be thinking that. And so often there's either this idea, there's something wrong with me, or sometimes it's the opposite idea, which is, there's something wrong with what's out there. There's something wrong with the world. Like the right woman for me just doesn't exist, or I'm only attracted to women that are not interested in me. If she's interested in me, I won't be attracted to her. You know, all of these kinds of patterns, which, and you know, we're joking around a little bit about them, but they're really, really painful. Yeah. And you know, when any one of us is caught up in a block like this, part of the nature of the block is that it feels real. Yeah. It feels like reality. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, I've been trying to date and mm-hmm. you know, there's just nobody on mm-hmm. the sites whose profile I like, or none of the, you know, I write to people and they don't write me back, or, you know, I mean, so people will come up with all kinds of evidence to prove this version of reality where you don't get to have what you want. And what we want to try to help you do tonight is find a different way to understand it so that you can really locate the issue in the place where you have the most power, which is right. actually inside of yourself.
And so oftentimes, you know, some blocks that as we, you know, as we talk to women and they say, well, I just, you know, don't know how to find her. I just can't find her. I just, she's not out there. What we learn is that sometimes they're actually really afraid of making the same mistake again. They've made, you know, they haven't chosen well, and they're, or something happened in that in the relationships, and they don't want to make the same mistakes. And they're afraid that if they're afraid to go out there, they're afraid, their fear causes them to make certain decisions that actually end up getting in their way.
And, you know, again, those of you that have listened to our work for a while, and we have a book here that I might refer to a little bit. Many of you may have it already. Conscious Lesbian Dating and Love, A Roadmap to Finding the Right Partner and Creating the Relationship of Your Dreams. If you don't have the book, I highly recommend it, because it's got, you know, 300 plus pages kind of downloaded from our brains onto paper or onto Kindle. Where was I going with that, though? I just completely lost my train of thought. there was a train of thought there somewhere. I think it was about neuroplasticity. So we talk a lot about the limbic system. Mm-hmm. And, right. you know, when we talk about communication, we talk about the kinds of things that get in the way in our relationships. Many of you have heard us talk about the limbic system, which is the part of the brain that controls our fight or flight or freeze response. And when we get in that triggered place, we can't see clearly, we can't speak clearly, we can't work things out in a healthy way with a partner. But what has been being found more and more lately is that even when we're walking around thinking that we're not in a triggered place, feeling consciously pretty good and feeling and pretty calm and centered, unconsciously, a part of our limbic system can still be caught in that fear place. And this actually has implications for all kinds of health problems that we have. It has implications for so much, but what we're going to focus on tonight is the implications that it has for dating and relationships. Because over and over again, what we see among you guys, lesbians and queer women, is a lot of fear.
Yeah.
You know, we are tender-hearted as women, and we bond deeply, and we end up, you know, sometimes bonding prematurely, and then we have really, really excruciating breakups sometimes. Mm-hmm. And when that has happened to you, even once, it can be totally devastating. And for many of us, it's happened a lot more than once.
And one thing also is, you know, we talk about the limbic system, and negative experiences stick to the limbic system like Velcro.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, positive experiences sort of, you know, roll right off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so
like, like Teflon.
And so it just keeps, oh, excuse me. Sorry, somebody did this.
Sorry about that. It'll just take us a minute to get back to the proper screen.
Sorry about that.
Okay. Yeah, there's a weird little glitch on this where anybody who's part of the call can start sharing their screen, and that's not actually what we want. So as Michelle was saying,
about negative experiences sticking to our limbic system like Velcro, mm-hmm.
and positive experiences rolling off of us like Teflon.
Right. And right. So we still hold those experiences.
Right. Right. Actually, the brain, many of you may have heard this, the brain has a negativity bias.
Right.
That's the technical way of saying that we are much more likely to retain negative experiences, to remember them clearly, than we are to retain and clearly remember positive experiences. And, you know, the reason why this is true is because to survive as a species, we needed to be kind of on the paranoid side. You know, like if there was something that looked like a stick in the road, but maybe it was a snake, we needed to respond as if it was a poisonous snake, you know, even if it, in some cases, was just a stick.
Right.
But the problem is that negativity bias or that tendency for the bad stuff to stick to us like Velcro, then actually literally rewires our brains mm-hmm. over time. And, you know, once you've had a number of difficult experiences in a relationship, your brain may get really programmed to expect that and even to create it. And so this is part of the neuroscience of how blocks that end up getting in your way mm-hmm. get created. Mm-hmm. It's not your fault. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you.
Right.
It's a completely human phenomenon. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly common.
Right.
But it doesn't have to win out, because even though this can be going on the unconscious limbic system level, or you may be conscious of it. I mean, you may be conscious of the fact that you're really nervous about dating. You may be aware of the fact that you're scared. But even if you're not, it could be happening on a limbic system level. Mm-hmm. Either way, the really good news is that you can use your conscious mind, your frontal cortex, to override the kind mm-hmm. of automatic messages of your limbic system. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, this is the technical talk. We're going to be trying to, you know, make it a little bit more accessible soon, but we right. wanted to give you a sense of the kind of yep. brain science behind what we're talking about.
Yep. And so another common block is, and this is one of mine, is that women don't believe they truly deserve the love that they want. And what that does, that what has a way of really changing the choices that we make, maybe we don't believe we deserve love, and so we stay away from dating entirely, or we continue to make, you know, choices aren't good for us, and that can really get in our way, that sense of, oh, you know, I don't really deserve this love, this great love that I know that I could have, maybe, or maybe I don't know, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, mm-hmm. so that's a big block that we see quite often.
Yeah. And other kinds of blocks have to do with the kinds of stuff that have happened to us in relationships. You know, many of us have a big fear around the feeling of being abandoned or being betrayed. Mm-hmm. You know, as we hear from a lot of women that have had a partner, you know, cheat on them in the past, and they find themselves walking around with a fear that that's going to happen in the future. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it actually never did happen, but there can still be a really intense fear of that. On the other hand, a lot of women, and this is certainly something that I have felt, also have a fear of being taken over, being suffocated. Mm-hmm. It's like being in a relationship is going to mean that I have to give myself up. She's going to want all my time. There's not going to be anything left for me. And so sometimes when you're walking around, you know, again, you might be aware of these kinds of concerns or fears consciously, or you might not. They might just mm-hmm. be kind of running you from underground. And I know for me, for a long time, I tended to get involved with women that were not 100% available. They would kind of look available initially, but then they weren't really. And it took me a really long time to realize that the reason why I had that pattern was because of my own fear mm-hmm. that if I was with somebody that was fully available, she was going to just take me over, and then I wasn't going to have any space for me. So I unconsciously kept myself safe from that by picking women that weren't going to take me over because they weren't going to be all in. You know, so that's just one example of how these issues run us from underneath, and it feels like the problem is out there.
Right.
And the problem is, when it feels like the problem is out there, you can't do anything
right,
about
you feel
it,
like
right?
You're out of control. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So when it feels like, well, there's just nobody out there who's any good, you know, all the good ones are taken, or all the good ones in my age range are taken, or all the good ones in my geographic area are taken, right. or, you know, then there's nothing you can do, right? Then you're up a creek. But when you realize, oh my God, actually the issue is inside of me, then all of a sudden you have the power again. And that's really what we're about with Conscious Girlfriend is helping you know that you actually have the power. You have the power to transform your relationship life and destiny.
And it's important to understand that these blocks are really distortions of reality. They're not things we have to believe. They're ways that we can learn how to really be aware of them. And then train and gain skills to get beyond them.
Mm-hmm.
And what's most important, the first thing is when you notice that maybe you have a block like this, is to look at the block with compassion and curiosity. To really have compassion with yourself and that whatever that is that you're dealing with, have compassion with yourself in that. And then also get curious about it. I wonder, you know, what's going on here? What's happening? How has this maybe been affecting me?
Mm-hmm. And even if you're not sure that it's your block, I mean, because some of you might be listening and thinking, okay, yeah, I can really see that this is mine. But there might be others of you that are listening and thinking, well, no, this really is, you know, I just keep meeting women and none of them have these things that I want. And the problem really is out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we would suggest that you do if that's what you're thinking is, again, as Michelle said, to just, you know, see if you're willing to approach the question with some more curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, oh, well, what if there's a way that I might be part of this equation that I haven't recognized?
Right.
Like, you know, what if I let myself just wonder about that a little bit? And there are some questions that we like to use, which were developed by a spiritual teacher named Byron Katie, who I'm sure some of you have heard of. She has a series of four powerful questions that she suggests that people ask to help start making that separation between what seems to just be true and what might actually be our own, you know, something happening inside of us.
Yeah, and they're wonderful questions, and if we think about if we're getting curious and we notice something that comes up, we can ask these questions. The first question is,
let's let them have a chance to think of something themselves.
Oh, good. Okay, good idea.
So so actually, right now, we would suggest that all of you just let yourself identify one or more things that feel like an issue for you, that feel like they're preventing you from having the dating life or the relationship life that you want. And it might be, you know, I'm not attractive enough. It might be there's not enough lesbians in my area. It might be, you know, whatever it is, whatever it feels like is getting in the way for you. See if you can identify it. If you have, you know, paper and pen, you can even write it down or just hold it in your mind. And then when we tell you what the questions are, you'll be able to actually work with the questions with your own issue in mind.
So we'll take a minute and let you
identify. What feels like a block. Again, whether it feels like it's inside of you or whether it feels like it's outside of you. You can work with it either way for this. Okay, so go ahead and lead them through the process.
Yes. So as you consider that thing that you've just come up with, the first of the things that you came up with, ask the first question, which is it true? And you know, you might, it's a yes or no question, and you might immediately think, well, yes, it's true, right? The second question is, do you absolutely know that it's true?
Can you be absolutely sure that it's true? So, for instance, if you said, I'm not attractive enough for somebody to be interested in me, can you be absolutely sure that that's true? Or if you said, there's not enough women in my area, can you be absolutely sure that that's true?
And the third question is, what emotions get brought up for me when I think about this thought? What is brought up? It might be sadness, maybe it's fear. What's brought up when I think this thought? And then the fourth question, which is my favorite, is who would I be? Or another way to phrase that is, what would it be like without that thought? So if your thought was, well, there's nobody in my area, what would it be like if you didn't have that thought? Or mm-hmm. your block felt like, I'm too old. What would it be without that thought? What would it be like without that thought? Who would you be without that thought?
Mm-hmm. And these questions might seem deceptively simple on the surface, but if you actually work with them, they can do some unearthing mm-hmm. and some shifting around of things inside of you. And part of what we think is powerful about them too is that, you know, if you do have something that really feels like a barrier that you're convinced is outside of you, these questions might help you start to locate that, oh, actually, maybe some of it is inside mm-hmm. of me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But now, sometimes what happens is that, and especially in our, you know, very therapy-prone culture, uh-huh. sometimes we'll tend to go to the why. So it's like, oh, well, why do I have this negative belief? Mm-hmm. Why is it that I think mm-hmm. I'm too old? Or why is it that I think I'm not attractive enough? Or why is it that I think women will betray me? Oh, it's probably because my mother said that thing to me when I was 6 years old. Or, you know, and in fact, there may be a connection, right? It you know, our childhoods absolutely do affect us. But what the neuroscience research is showing more and more is that going to the why often is actually not helpful, because it can keep you kind of stewing around in this experience of, like, there's something wrong with me.
And it can keep reinforcing those sort of those networks that were placed there that, you know, that this arose out of.
Right. The neural pathways.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can keep reinforcing those networks, which is not where you want to go. You actually want to create new networks.
Mm-hmm.
And it can keep reactivating your limbic system.
Right. Right. If you're busy thinking, well, what's wrong with me that I have this right. belief? I shouldn't have this belief. I should have changed this belief by
right.
now.
Right.
If I had found the right therapist, right. I would no longer right. have this belief.
Right.
You know, whatever.
Yeah.
So that will just keep digging the groove deeper.
And there's a great analogy, and that's if you had an accident and you hurt your arm and your arm is, you know, is injured. And you don't actually spend too much time figuring out, you know, why that happened. Well, you know what happened, you had the accident, but that's not what's important. You do physical therapy, you know, which helps you get the arm back into healthy shape. So you do exercises, specific exercises that help to strengthen certain muscles or make sure certain ligaments work the way they're supposed to. And that's how you get better. And the same thing actually works for your brain.
Right, right. So we're going to lead you through a few practices to try to help you in that process of developing new neural pathways. And we also are planning to do some coaching live of a few people that volunteered ahead of time after that. And then we will take your questions. So, it's fun because we're doing things a little differently tonight than we often do on the teleclasses. Yeah.
So the first practice is one that I think many of you may have been familiar with. We've done it on teleclasses various times, and we've also done it in our live classes. We do it in a 12-week class. We do it quite a bit.
We're rather fond of it. And because it's very effective.
It's very effective. And we keep hearing from women over and over and over again that once they were introduced to this practice, it really changed their experience. So we're going to teach it to you again. It's called Metta. This is a bit of an adaptation of the standard Buddhist loving kindness meditation. It's focused just on you. So we'll just do, I will be saying some phrases aloud, and you can say them, actually we're all muted, so you can say them aloud if you're in a space where that's possible for you, or you can say them to yourself if you're not in a private space. I would recommend saying them aloud if you can. And just repeat after me, and just notice what, as you're listening to yourself say these phrases, notice what's happening. And there's no judgment, doesn't matter. You know, you might notice yourself sinking in and going, ah, yes. You might notice not believing it. You might notice tears come up. There's all sorts of reactions you might have, and any of them are great. They're fine. So take a moment and just, you know, get comfortable in your seat or lying down or wherever you are. And take a few breaths. And just repeat these phrases after me. May I be happy. May I know my true worth. May I know that I am lovable. May I love and be loved with ease. May I be happy. May I know my true worth. May I know that I am lovable. May I love and be loved with ease. May I be happy. May I know my true worth. May I know that I am lovable. May I love and be loved with ease. May I be happy. May I know my true worth. May I know that I am lovable. May I love and be loved with ease. May I be happy. May I know my true worth. May I know that I am lovable. May I love and be loved with ease.
So, as many of you know, we suggest doing this practice every day for at least 5 or 10 minutes a day. And the really cool thing, again, about the brain research is they have literally researched this practice. Yes. Not our exact wording, but we're pretty sure our exact wording works too. And they've literally shown the brain changes that it makes. But for it to be most effective, what I would also suggest is, you know, A, that you take the 5 or 10 minutes a day to actually say this, and more is better. You know, if you want to take 20 or 30 minutes a day to say it, great. You'll groove those new pathways even more quickly. But the other thing that's really important, we haven't talked about this before, but I'm getting this from what I'm reading, is to interrupt throughout the rest of the day, if you find yourself having thoughts that are in opposition to this, like if you find yourself having thoughts like, oh, I'll never meet her, oh, it's too late for me, oh, maybe I'm just not meant to have love, oh, all the good ones are taken, you know, whatever the thoughts are, if you can catch yourself when you're having that thought, and immediately redirect yourself to the metta practice, then again, you're going to progress even faster. Because literally on a brain level, if we had a little scan, what we could show you is that, you know, every time that you say the metta practice, you know, you're kind of growing this new branch in this new direction. But every time you cut off one of the thoughts that goes in opposition, You're pruning. It's like if you think about pruning a bush or a tree, if you want it to grow in this direction, you also have to prune the branches that are growing in the other direction.
Right.
right?
Yeah.
So I think that adding that piece to your meta practice is going to make it even more effective. And you know, the other thing that I've learned recently is that it's also really important. We emphasize compassion. And one thing that the brain registers is a smile. Even if it's a fake smile, your brain, your limbic system actually doesn't know the difference. It can register when you have your lips stretched in a smile position. It doesn't know the difference if it's a fake laugh either. Some of you have probably heard of laughter yoga. You know, there's like people that get together all around the country in rooms and just fake laugh, and then eventually it turns into real laughter, and it has all these health benefits because your limbic system doesn't know if it's a fake smile or a fake laugh. So what I would suggest is that when you catch yourself in a thought, which is, you know, a negative thought, an old belief getting in your way, give it a big smile and then go into the meta practice. Just, may I be happy? May I know my true worth? May I know that I am lovable? May I love and be loved with ease? And it sounds simple, but it will make a difference in your brain pathways. And it will make a difference, therefore, in how open you are when you're just walking through your life, or if you're at a lesbian event, or if you're online. You'll be more open. Other people will be more drawn to you. You'll be more able to recognize when they're a good fit and when they're not. This stuff really, really does work.
Yes, so, it really does work.
So it's a simple little practice, but it's powerful. So the other practice that we wanted to take you through is what they call in the neuroscience biz a mental rehearsal. And some of you have probably heard about the studies that show these amazing things. Like they have studies where they have, you know, people that play basketball, and they have one group that goes and actually practices shooting baskets every day for a month. And then they have another group of people that are actually just sitting in their houses, mentally imagining shooting baskets every day for a month. And the people that are just sitting there imagining it improve almost as much as the people that are actually doing it. You know, and they've demonstrated this with people playing the piano. They've demonstrated it with all kinds of skills. So so we want to give you a chance to have a little mental rehearsal of finding the partner that you want. So again, let yourself get kind of comfortable and relaxed, and take some deep breaths. And then let yourself really sink into your chair or wherever you're sitting. Take some more deep breaths in from your belly. Really call yourself into yourself, call yourself into your body. And then let yourself imagine that you're sitting next to somebody who you've recently met, who you have a really good feeling about. You know, you really like each other. There's a good sense of rapport between you. You've had some conversations about your relationship vision, and it looks like, you know, you and she really want similar things from a relationship. And you've had some conversations about the conscious girlfriend skills, and she's totally on board with them. Maybe she's actually even taken our class or done some similar work. So, you know, your brain, your rational mind is really recognizing, wow, there's some really good possibilities here. And, you know, then you're also aware of feeling some good possibilities elsewhere in your body. You know, you're feeling a little sense of opening in your heart. It just feels good to be around her. And you feel that little extra buzz of excitement, that little tingle, because you're kind of attracted to her. And, you know, just from the way that you're joking around and looking at each other, you can tell that that's mutual. And so just let yourself really try on this feeling, like, wow, I've really met somebody that it feels like I could have a really good possibility of forming a lasting partnership with. And just really let yourself try this feeling on through your body. Feel the energy of it. Feel the excitement. There might be a little fear too, and that's fine. And if so, just let yourself take an even deeper breath in. Breathe right into the fear. Some people say that fear is excitement without the breath. So when you bring in the breath to the fear, it may actually turn to excitement. And you might even notice yourself feeling a little giddy, you know, or like playful, happy, you know, just looking forward to the adventures that you and she will have. Really let yourself feel what it feels like in your body to feel like, wow, maybe I've really met the right one. And she's just as excited about me as I am about her. And we're going to have a good time together. So let yourself just really kind of bookmark these feelings in your body. If this visualization brought up good feelings, just let yourself know that you can return to them at any time to deepen them. And if this visualization felt good to you, if it felt fun to you, felt positive and enlivening and exciting, then I would highly recommend doing it frequently. Because the more times you do it and the more real it feels in your body, the more easily it will actually become reality. But sometimes what we find when we do a visualization like this is that it actually doesn't feel good. You know, some of you might feel like, oh my God, I'm scared shitless. You know, like I thought this is really what I wanted, but you know, now that I feel like I've met her, even in this fantasy, I feel like I have to run the other way. You know, and so if you notice a reaction like that inside yourself, what I would suggest is using a phrase that they use in emotional freedom technique and other kinds of work, which is, even though I have this fear, or even though I have this reaction, whatever it is, I deeply and completely accept myself. So again, you can try, you know, we have you all muted, so you can say that out loud in the privacy of your own home. You know, I deeply and completely accept myself, even though I have this fear right now. Even with this fear right now, I deeply and completely accept myself. And if it feels to you like you don't deeply and completely accept yourself, and so it feels just fake to say that, then what I would suggest that you say is, even though I have this fear, I would like to deeply and completely accept myself. I intend to deeply and completely accept myself. I'm working toward deeply and completely accepting myself. And again, the purpose of this is to keep grooving those neural pathways, which are actually the pathways that you want to create, rather than going into, well, why is it that I feel this way, and what's wrong with me, and will I ever get over it? And, you know, like, we want to X that out. We want to prune off those limbs of the tree, because you're really trying to grow the growth in a different mm-hmm. direction.
And mm-hmm. you might also, you know, if it feels right after you go through that, you know, that may I deeply and completely accept myself some in the future, to just go into metta and use that as a practice as these feelings come up for you.
Yeah. So these are just a few of the kinds of tools that we teach. Some of you on this call have already taken our 12-week roadmap class, the 12-week roadmap to conscious lesbian dating and lasting love. But some of you have not.
Right.
And we do have a new class starting next Monday, May 23rd, and there's actually only a few spots left in it. And so if the things that we say tonight and the work that we're doing makes you realize, hey, I would really like to do more of this. I've got some blocks I need to work through. I've got some skills I need to develop, and I want some help with it. Then we would love to have you join us in the Roadmap class. It's a really cool experience. It's very powerful to get to come together with a group of other women. It's limited to 25 women, and we typically have women from all over the country, sometimes other countries as well. And we meet like this every 2 weeks for a group coaching call. Only on the group coaching calls, you'll be talking a lot more. We'll be talking a lot less. Uh-huh. And although we will give you coaching and feedback. And then each week, you will get a series of written exercises to do and also a set of audios to work with for that week's material. So it's a very powerful transformational process. Okay. It's the best way that we know of to really rewire your brain and develop your skill set and get ready for the kind of love that that you want. Or if you don't want a relationship yet, it's also a great way to get over your past relationships and just get to a place where you really feel connected to yourself and at peace with the past and potentially open to what may come in the future. We definitely have women come into the Roadmap class at all different stages of their relationship journey. You know, some have had a recent breakup, some are early in a dating stage with somebody.
Some have been single for a really long time. Yeah,
right.
It's a real mix.
Right. Yeah. Some feel like, yeah, I want a relationship right now. Some feel like, gee, I don't even know if I want another relationship.
Yes. Yeah.
But the Roadmap class is a great forum for you, wherever you might be on that spectrum, to have some time and have some community to develop these skills and also dissolve whatever blocks might be getting in your way. So let's move into the coaching.
And so
if our people are on the line, I don't know if they are.
Yes. Yeah, so Dorinda is first, and if you're on the computer, you can unmute yourself in the bottom left corner, or if you're on your phone, you do *6. We'll unmute yourself. Dorinda, are you here? Dorinda.
I did see that Samantha was here.
Oh, hello. Hello.
Sound like somebody unmuted herself.
Somebody unmuted themselves. Is that Dorinda? Are you there? Well, why don't we try for Samantha?
Yeah, let's try for Samantha, and then we'll come back to Dorinda and see if she's there then. And I did see Samantha's name on the screen. I don't know if you're the Samantha that sent us the question, though. Is that you, Samantha?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Hey, Samantha.
Great.
Great. Okay.
Okay.
So we'll start with you.
Yeah. So you sent us a little email summary, but which we can read if you prefer, but I thought it might be good if you can just kind of briefly describe what you feel like your block is. What's the issue that you're working with?
I think, good evening, first of all.
Yeah.
And thank you for the opportunity. I think where I'm kind of at right now is I have finished a relationship last year. So it's been about a year before that, and it was about 11 years long. Before that was 10 years. So I think for me, I kind of thought that it was a failure, not exactly knowing how to go forward. Kind of looking back, 10 years probably not a failure. However, I don't want to make the same mistakes, which for me, I think was not being completely honest about what I really needed in the relationship. Kind of where I'm stuck at is being content versus being happy.
Can you repeat that? It sort of broke up for a minute. Can you repeat that again?
Just the last sentence.
I think the difference for me is the difference of whether to be happy in a relationship or content.
Be happy in a relationship or be
content.
Content.
You know, able to do. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. So you're talking about being happy or being content?
Right. For me, you know, I think the main reason that I left was just for each relationship is that there was not enough intimacy towards the end. And kind of feeling like I don't want to go into another relationship without being really clear as to what I want.
Mm-hmm.
That's really realistic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think, you know, one question that I would ask you, Samantha, is do you feel like you really deserve to get the relationship that has in it what you want?
I would say yes.
Okay.
I just think that I also don't know if it's realistic.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's my hesitant way to answer that question.
So, are you dating right now? Are you out there dating? Or are you just sort of stuck? Are you sort of no?
Mm-hmm. I have moved. I've changed jobs relocation wise. So I kind of have a lot on my plate. Mm-hmm. We have lost a member of our family lately, so there's a lot on my plate. So now I'm kind of okay, settled in. Work is good. Home is good. So now it's kind of like, okay, my career focus a little bit more,
gotcha.
You know, on what the next step is for me.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess, so if you feel like you really, you know, that thing about it, maybe it's not realistic, that sounds like, I guess one question to ask is to, you know, to go through those Byron Katie questions. I don't know if you did that in this last exercise.
Yeah.
And what sort of bubbled up for you when you did that exercise?
I think it's realistic if I'm very honest about what I need. It's not an easy subject to talk about. It's the better stuff. So for me, the average person I think is fine with a couple times a week, where I'm not. That's it. Seems like sometimes it's to other people, but for me, it's not.
Mm-hmm. So, what is that? What makes it feel hard to talk about this perception that what you want is different from what most people want?
Yes, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's just conversation. It's not, you know, do you like your coffee with or without cream? You know, it's kind of hard to dive into that with somebody, and I just don't know where to start.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there, I'm hearing a few different issues here. One is how do you actually bring up the conversation? But another one is maybe under the surface is it really okay that you want what you want, even if it's different from what most people want in your belief?
That feels more true.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Right, mm-hmm. Right. So that's a great thing to identify, because then it sounds like the work is really for you to shift the neural pathways. It sounds like maybe there's some sense of shame or embarrassment or discomfort, you know, that you want too much, or however it is that you're framing it inside. And to really get to the belief that, hey, the way that I am is great. The way I am is wonderful. And the way I am is going to be an incredible gift for the right woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to be an incredible gift for me. And to really work on knowing that in all the fibers of your being. Because it sounds like when you really know that, then the question of how to have the conversation with someone when you start dating is going to be easier, right?
I agree. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Is that something that you really deserve? Is that real? For me, I kind of, the word realistic for me really sticks. You know, is that realistic? it hasn't been so far.
And I guess one question, when you have brought up this particular sort of your optimal desire around this with your partners, with your ex-partners earlier on in your relationship, I mean, did you have those conversations early on initially?
Yes. And I mean, it's the honeymoon phase, you know, in the beginning of it, there's truly no issue. You know, if you want to have sex 20 times a week, then they're fine with that.
Uh-huh.
5 years into it, then it's like, we haven't met for a week or so. And for me, it's really tough. Mm-hmm. And I require more. Mm-hmm. It's kind of also a mental release. So for me, I kind of realized that lately, that's part of just how I process stress in my life as well. Mm-hmm. So more lately, but I just don't know that's, you know, that's truly realistic. And then it's become verbal bargaining, 5-6 years into it of, okay, if it can't be provided in a relationship, then how do we still let this work or make this work? You know, mm-hmm. what are we willing to do? To let me step out and then step back in, or, you know, how is that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think the most, mm-hmm. you know, the most recent negotiation that I had with my ex was, okay, you can step out of the relationship, but only with them, not with women. And so that was fine for several years. But then I had met somebody, and that's who I started with, which was another woman. I think that was kind of the end of going, okay, it's just not working.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So, you know, again, going back to that word, is it realistic? I think mm-hmm. what I'm getting from what you're saying is that when you really fully accept that this is one of your top priorities in a relationship, then you will make sure that whoever you consider going deeper with, it's also one of her top priorities, because that's the key, you know. And we all get to choose a few top priorities and a few deal breakers. You know, sometimes we see women that have, you know, a list of 25 different must-haves. Right. And if the list is too long, that does actually become a way of keeping oneself out of a relationship, right? Because finding somebody to love and be loved by is not the same as going to a car dealership and you get to order the car with all the options you want. But it is totally realistic to have a few must-haves. And it sounds like, you know, somebody with a really high sex drive is high on your list of must-haves. And, you know, yeah. And there are other women with high sex drives. Yes. Absolutely. You are not the only one, you know. So, but you're absolutely right. Of course, in the honeymoon period, there tends, you know, everybody tends to want more at that point. You know, so that's
right.
You know, and there's also the danger of somebody saying, like, oh yeah, honey, I'm always going to want this. But I think there are ways, again, when you're really, really comfortable that this is how you are and this mm-hmm. is what you want, then there are ways to ask somebody, well, what's it been like for you in past relationships? You know, once you were no longer in the honeymoon phase with your other girlfriends, how often did you typically want sex? And what was it like if she wanted more than you? How did you work that out? You know, or how do you feel about polyamory? You know, mm-hmm. would you be comfortable with that? You know, just that is part of what we teach in the 12-week roadmap class is, you know, both the specific skills and also the confidence to have all of these kinds of conversations early on. Because I think so often when we're in limerence, we just think, oh, it's right. so wonderful. We'll work it out somehow, right. you know. But when there are really significant differences, it sometimes can't be worked out. So it is good to know up front, just to be really, really clear. Who are you? Who am I? You know, it sounds like next time around you would also know, hey, this is an issue that's really gotten in the way in my previous relationships. So, you know, without sort of carving the negative pathways deeper of like, therefore it's going to be an issue again, just to find out all the information that you need to find out and mm-hmm. to be just really clear, you know, because again, having a sex drive that might be higher than average is just one of many differences, you know, and again, it's a gift or it's a curse, depending on who you're with and how you can work it out.
Yeah. I think it starts off as a gift and ends as a curse.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I would suggest working with you know, I deeply and completely accept myself mm-hmm. with my high sex drive, you know, mm-hmm. doing meta. You can mm-hmm. even change some of the meta phrases, mm-hmm. you know, so that I'm, you know, come up with a phrase that really speaks to you in terms of the flow of sexual giving and receiving in the relationship. Yeah, because I think as you shift internally, it's going to be a lot easier to have this work out externally. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for volunteering. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for your vulnerability and your courage. And sometimes there are people on the line that are like, hey, how can I get in touch with that person afterwards? So you never know. Somebody might be thinking that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, ladies.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
So
Dorinda, are you on the line? Okay. Seems like maybe Dorinda is not. Okay. Emmanuel, are you on the line?
Emmanuel, hello? Yeah. Is that Emmanuel?
Yes, it's Emmanuel.
Oh, hey. Great. How are you?
Good. Do you want me to do the video part?
It's up to you.
If you're open to it, that'd be great. It's nice to see you.
Oh, sure. All right, sure, I'll do it. Oh, no, it's working.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes. Working. Okay.
Great.
Yes. Hello.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. Thanks for suggesting this.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So if you want to...
Do you want to give a little summary that you feel comfortable sharing about where you feel like your block is, of what you're wanting help with?
Basically, I've been in and out of seeing women who've been in a relationship for the past 9 months. And we've taken breaks and, you know, no one's cheating because her other person knows about us. And, you know, to me, it feels like I've been waiting around, you know, to be with her. She's still been very involved with her other person, and which I understand, but, you know, she does tell me that she, last time we sort of reconnected, she did say she, you know, was moving towards me and was moving towards friendship with her girlfriend. But, you know, basically what happened is she was still doing a lot of processing about her in my presence, and that felt very alienating to me. Mm-hmm. Even though we had a lot of other special moments, and she's been there for me for, like, I just lost my father, and she was, like, you know, really did show up for me. And you know, basically I decided that the fact that she was still in this process of, you know, processing her relationship with the other woman, that we shouldn't see each other during this time. It's really hurtful to me here for her to kind of zone out. Well, that's what it feels like to me. Like, she'll feels like she's leaving our present, you know, intimacy to grieve the other relationship. So I suggest we not see each other until she's really in a place of either being with her or not being with her. And that actually really upset her, which surprised me. Mm. And because I broke a date that she was really looking forward to and turned into a big, like, 2-day argument, which was horrible. And since then, she hasn't been able to be in touch with me at all. And that's been over a month. So I'm just wondering, you know, I don't know. I guess I'm just trying to figure out, you know, if we do reconnect, is it possible to get close again after so much anger and anxiety, lots of anxiety and, you know, perceived rejection?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's a tough situation. And I think what's important to sort of think about is whether she really has been, certainly, or is now really ready to fully sort of engage with you in a complete way. And, you know, I think your initial instinct to say, hey, let's wait until you're, like, totally, you know, figured it out was actually exactly right on. I mean, I think that was a really good instinct, because I think that when there's still emotional entanglements, it's really, you know, it's really hard to build intimacy and to really be able to move forward.
But the one thing that I would add is when you said, you know, it felt really hurtful to you when she would be processing the end of the relationship, yeah, while she's spending time with you. The word hurtful is interesting to me because it makes it sound like there's a way that you're taking it personally.
Mm. Yeah,
that's a good
point. That's true.
Point.
Yep. That's a really good point. I am. I'm, like, feeling super rejected.
Okay. So that's a great place to ask those Byron Katie questions. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm, is this true that she's rejecting you by talking about her process,
right,
with, mm-hmm, with the other woman?
Mm-hmm.
And you absolutely know it's true.
And that's a good question. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it's necessarily true, actually. Now that you asked the question, because she's told me it's, that's why she's so upset too. She said, you know, she thought she was sharing her intimate, you know, with me. Mm-hmm. And then I would just react and get mad, mm-hmm, or upset or leave.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's interesting. So in her mind, it was actually even a way to be close to you, maybe, because she was just sharing deeply what was going on with her.
I think that's the way she saw it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
But so, I would feel like I was being kicked in the stomach.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And so that's the limbic system reaction. And I don't know if you were on the call earlier when we were talking about the limbic system, the part of the brain that goes into the fight or flight response. Like, you felt like you were being kicked in the stomach. That's a very visceral response, right? And it's hard not to respond when you have that feeling. But at the same time, this is where when you engage your neocortex, which is the part of you that's actually capable of clear thought, you can then say, oh, okay, it feels like I'm being kicked in the stomach. It feels like I'm being rejected. But is that true? Is that actually what's happening?
And I mean, we do, when we feel very strong feelings, we do automatically try to make meaning of them. And it's very important to be able to know, oh yeah, you feel that kick in the stomach. It's just a kick in the stomach. You don't have to make a meaning of it. and the Byron Katie questions are a great way to look at that, or just to just focus on the kick in the stomach, just focus on mm-hmm. that body sensation that you're feeling.
And bring compassion to it. Without turning it into a story about this is what she's doing to me.
Oh, yeah. That's why the fight got so bad, because it became so ugly, because then I gave every single example that I'd been holding in of when I felt hurt.
Right.
Yeah. You hurt me when you did this, and when you did this, and when you did that.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know. I mean, I'm letting, you know, I'm trying to accept, like, whatever happened, that, you know, maybe I, you know, really hurt her.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, that is what happened.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I want to, you know, I feel a lot of compassion for you, and I want to really encourage you to feel compassion for yourself as you look at the ways that, you know, what you said to her was actually not as skillful as it could have been. You know,
exactly.
And it's painful to realize that, but I think the really great thing when you do realize that is that then it also can go a long way toward answering your other question, which was, is it possible to rebuild trust when there's been so much hurt? Because in my experience, the way that you can rebuild trust when there's been so much hurt is when each person is really able to show up and own her stuff, you know? So if you were able to show up with her and say, like, oh my God, I'm so sorry that I laid all that on you, and I really see now that I was just, it was my stuff that was coming up, and I really see you weren't actually rejecting me. I was just taking it in as if you were. And, you know, I realize that I need to work on this stuff rather than putting it on you. That would probably go a long way toward helping her feel trust again. And for you, it sounds like, you know, as you dismantle the story of she was hurting me in this way, she was hurting me in that way, and you realize, oh my God, it was bringing up that stuff for me, but she wasn't actually doing it to me. Then, you know, then you can conceivably let go of a lot. And it doesn't mean, you know, it's okay to set boundaries. Like, it's okay to say, you know what, I'm realizing I don't really have the space to hold your processing the grief about ending with this other person, because, you know, it starts triggering me. And so, you know, I appreciate you wanting to share it with me, but I just feel like I can't really hear it right now. You know, it's okay to say things like that. But that's really different than saying, you're hurting me. You know, I get the feeling that you're getting the distinction.
Yeah. The other one's more of a choice that I'm making for myself. The first one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes.
And the SCORE process, I don't know if you're familiar with the SCORE process that we teach, but one of the key steps in it, the R step, is taking responsibility for your own feelings and also relinquishing responsibility for the other person's feelings. And it's, again, it's tricky to do when we get triggered, because as you were saying, you know, you felt kicked in the stomach. And believe me, I have been where you are many times. I don't know if you've seen the video that we did about it, but we did a whole video about, you know, this way that in hindsight, I could see that I really messed up a relationship with somebody that I was madly in love with, because these difficult feelings would come up in me and I blamed her for them. It's so easy to do, but it's so important to stop doing. And it's totally possible to stop doing once you do all the steps in the SCORE process. You know, it's a whole process that we teach, but, you know, just I'll say them real briefly. You know, the S is step back into yourself. The C is connect to yourself with compassion. The O is open to observe more about what's actually going on. And then the R is, taking full responsibility for your own feelings and relinquishing responsibility for hers. And then the E, once you've gone through the other steps, the E is actually being able to make an empowered choice about what you say, how you communicate. So that's the process that we teach, that, you know, because of neuroplasticity, after you go through it a bunch of times, it actually becomes very easy and automatic.
Okay. That sounds really good. I just ordered your book to start.
Oh, great. Cool. Yep. Great. Great.
In the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks.
That's really helpful.
Thank you so much for sharing so vulnerably.
Yeah. Thank you. No, it's really enlightening. Yeah. Cool.
Great.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you a lot. Thank you very much. Yeah. So one last call for Dorinda before we open it up for questions. Dorinda, are you there? Dorinda. Are you there, Dorinda? Okay. I guess Dorinda is not there. But we would love to hear from some of the others of you. You can either unmute yourself with the little icon in the lower left corner of your screen, or do *6 if you're on the phone, or you can chat your questions. Mm-hmm. And I did see that somebody chatted a book recommendation for Samantha, so I'll just read it out loud to everybody in case people on the phone are interested as well. She said, Samantha, there's a great book that deals with sex drive inequity, among other things, called The Whole Lesbian Sex Book, A Passionate Guide for All of Us. The author doesn't use the terms low and high in reference to drive, as that further stigmatizes both partners. You might enjoy the book. Okay, great. Thank you for that recommendation.
Yeah.
So other people have questions or want to share what came up, what your blocks are, what came up for you with the visualization or with the Byron Katie questions or with the meta practice. Any questions or anything anybody wants to share?
It's a quiet group tonight. Somebody unmuted yourself. I saw somebody. Is that Linda? Did you unmute yourself? Did you want to ask a question?
Looks like not.
Okay.
Well, we could still read Dorinda's question, I guess, even though she's not here.
We could, yes.
Dorinda said she's been working with a therapist to feel more self-worth and believe that she's worth living. But her relationship ended.
Loving, yeah.
Oh, worth loving. Well, you think it was a typo?
I think so.
Worth loving. Okay. Her relationship ended February 13th due to the old tape still playing in her head. She said, being that I've always been cheated on one way or another, I come to a certain point and the tapes get very loud. I tried to do things different this time, talking about it, and needless to say, it didn't help. I really love this woman, and we connected in so many areas and had common interests. I truly believe without any doubt we belong together. I just don't know what to do at this point. So that's a really painful story, and we really appreciated Dorinda's awareness that the issue was these old tapes still playing in her head about, you know, that she's going to get cheated on because she's always been cheated on before. And that's such a painful and such a classic example of exactly what we were talking about earlier with the neural pathways. You know, in essence, we end up hypnotizing ourselves into believing things. You know, I recently went to a training where they gave a great example of this. You know, they were saying, okay, imagine that you have a 5-year-old kid who's going to go to school for the first time. And then imagine if you said to her, like, school's going to be so horrible and scary for you. The teacher might be really nasty to you. The other kids might bully you. You know, the schoolwork might be too hard for you. You know, you might not know the answer to a question and you might get called on and then you'd be really humiliated and embarrassed. You know, like imagine if you gave the five-year-old kid all of these messages over and over. Can you imagine the kind of state she would be in by the time the first day of school came? It's like terrifying, right?
But we tell ourselves these stories
right
all the time.
Right.
All the time.
And the problem is the more you tell yourself those stories, the more that's what's likely to happen.
Yeah.
And the more that's what you will perceive. Oh, Linda says she unmuted herself, but perhaps it didn't work. Oh, we weren't hearing you.
We weren't hearing you.
Well, we'll go back to you, Linda. Let me just finish what my thought was here. So the remedy really is to start telling ourselves a different story. And because of the way the limbic system operates, at first it won't feel true. Like if you're telling yourself the story, I can be totally confident in my partner's love. I can be completely confident that she will be faithful to me. I know without a doubt that she loves me and is connected to me. I know our relationship will work out. You know, at first, if you're saying those kinds of things to yourself, your limbic system might start screaming, no way, she's going to cheat like all the other ones did, you know? And this is, again, where using the neocortex, the rational part of your brain, to override the, you know, the limbic system, the other thing they call it is the reptile brain, you know? So I used to like to say, it's like I have this big iguana in me, you know? And I actually love iguanas, but in this case, I wouldn't want to let an iguana run my love life because I don't think the iguana really knows what it is that I want.
And I think also what's true oftentimes with the fear of being cheated on is actually an underlying fear of loss and loss of a connection. And I think in any kind of fear, you know, definitely sort of overriding it with these sorts of practices, but also another practice, another approach is to befriend the fear. Because if we can befriend the fear, just experience it, know it, you know, and allow it to say, yeah, there you are, fear, you know, we actually will let it, it will actually tend to go away faster than if we're trying to keep it at bay or tell ourselves, you know, horrible stories or whatever. So getting in touch with the fear and befriending it is another way to
right.
have it go away quickly.
But befriending it doesn't necessarily mean telling your girlfriend, like, oh, I'm having that fear right. again, you know, or do you have a crush on somebody else?
Right, right.
But just kind of quietly naming it within yourself,
yes.
but without believing the story that it's telling.
Yes.
And then the other practice that could help a lot with this kind of issue, since Dorinda, you actually identified that part of the issue was your struggle to believe that you were worth loving, is using the meta practice that Michelle yes. led us through mm-hmm. earlier. So just giving yourself that blessing mm-hmm. over and over and over, you know, may I know that mm-hmm. I am lovable. Mm-hmm. May I love and be loved with ease. Yes. That will, my prediction would mm-hmm. be that over time, that will really, really shift mm-hmm. things inside of you.
Yeah.
It will really help build those pathways. Mm-hmm. That help you believe and know that you are mm-hmm. worth loving mm-hmm. and help you love and be loved with ease. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Linda doesn't have a microphone. So, well, if you want to type in, Linda, if you want to type in your question, you can just type in your question and we'll answer it.
And if anybody else wants to chat a question or speak a question or comment,
unmute yourself.
That's fine.
Again, *6 if you're on the phone or little icon on the bottom left if you're on the computer.
And also, just for those that might be interested in the roadmap class, I wanted mm-hmm. to let you know how to sign up.
I should type in the
you
URL.
Well, it's also just consciousgirlfriend.com/roadmap.
Yep.
So it's pretty straightforward.
Yep.
And as I said, the class does start on Monday. And it's pretty close to full, but we have a few spots left.
Yeah.
So it'd be great to have some of you that are on the call tonight in the class. Because it's, you know, as I hope you're getting the sense of from tonight, just spending time diving into these issues in a way that, you know, with an intention to grow mm-hmm. and shift mm-hmm. Is a really powerful thing.
Mm-hmm. So M raised her hand, so let me unmute you.
I can't see where to type.
Okay.
Okay. So you can,
there we go.
Oh, I'm hearing you.
Can you hear me?
Is this Linda?
No, is this M or Linda?
Oh.
It's not Linda.
Okay, well, I see Linda's question now.
Go ahead.
Okay. So Linda's question says, when I feel like I'm experiencing a block, my brain kicks in and says it's only a feeling and feelings change, but my mind tells me it's real. I could use some feedback, please. Okay. So this is great, this distinction that you're making between your brain and your mind. And I think that what you're talking about here is what I was calling your neocortex versus your limbic brain or your reptile brain. Yeah. Okay. Oh, we can hear you now. Yeah. Yay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
So
my block.
Yeah. Oh, great. Well, now you're being heard. Yay. So again, you know, this is where we get multiple kinds of feedback from multiple parts of our being at the same time. And it's important to know what part of your being you can trust for what. You know, the limbic system, the reptile brain, is the part of your being that you can totally trust if you're walking along and suddenly a rattlesnake rears up and rattles at you. You know, your limbic system is the part that's going to get you like running a half mile away before your cognitive brain even recognizes what happened. You know? That's what the limbic system is really good at. That's what it's designed to do. But as we were talking about earlier, it has a negativity bias. Mm-hmm. It is designed to see danger even when there is no danger. And so it's not the wisest part of you. It's a great part when you're in sudden danger, but when it's getting in your way of a kind of a growth that you want to be able to make, it's not the best part to listen to. And so by really training your brain, the rewiring your brain thing is real. And it's by giving yourself these other kinds of messages.
And I think also, you know, when you sort of have the sense of this thing is real, to ask the Byron Katie questions. I mean, I think that's a really good tool that can help you see how things are not actually quite as real as they might seem or might feel to you.
I'm glad you guys brought this up because I've not heard that before.
Uh-huh.
Those questions.
Yeah, they're wonderful, yeah.
They are, and I do something like that when I'm at work.
Uh-huh.
And my coworker, you know, gets a little, whatever she gets. And then I remind myself that I just need to take care of me. I need to take care of my customers. I don't have to let her stuff, you know, influence how I'm behaving, which is a new path for me to take. I used to always make myself feel small so I wouldn't be, quote, in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big growth for me.
That's great. Yeah. It sounds like that's exactly the same skill that we're talking about using here as well.
Okay.
Recognizing that you have a choice in how you respond. And what sometimes feels like, you know, the instant response is not necessarily the best response.
Yes. My boss, the VP, tells me that too. He goes, you know, wait at least 2 minutes before you respond to somebody's negativity. That's my own negativity then.
Yeah. And sometimes it takes a lot longer than 2 minutes, depending on how triggered we are. But 2 minutes is a good place to start.
Yeah.
Thank you, ladies.
You're welcome. Yeah,
thanks
for your question.
Yeah.
So, Em, are you're unmuted, so you can go ahead and.
Oh, great! Oh, Em says I'm looking forward to the retreat at the end of June. trying to determine if I should take the course before or after the weekend. I'm in the middle of divorcing, which is good, and kids are doing great, but hugely busy with practical items and also grieving losses. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think you could go either way. You know, I think the course could probably help you with the grieving process. I certainly would not say you need to go through the grieving process first before taking the course, because actually one of the weeks in the course is all about kind of making peace with the past. And of course, sometimes that takes longer than a week, but I mean, we spend a week specifically focusing on that. In terms of the being hugely busy with practical items, though, you know, that's up to you. I mean, the course is self-paced. So each week you'll get that week's audio lessons and written lessons, and you can, you know, find your own time for doing them. And some women don't go through the whole 12 weeks within the 12-week time slot. You know,
in fact, many don't.
Yeah. I mean, you'll have the lessons forever. But it is good when you're taking the course if you are able to, you know, come to many or most of the coaching calls. I think you could even just come to the coaching calls and then do the other work later. I mean, that would be one possibility if the coaching calls would be supportive now.
Whatever logistics seems to make sense to you. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, sure. Yeah, thanks. Great. Oh, great. We'll look forward to seeing you in
me too.
A little over a month. We're excited. No.
Oh, and by the way, about the retreat, the Conscious Girlfriend Summer Camp, did we have one slot open?
One spot left.
Okay, so we do have one spot. So if anybody on this call feels like you would like to come to Conscious Girlfriend Summer Camp, which is going to be June 30th to July 3rd in the Santa Cruz Mountains. Yep. The URL for that is consciousgirlfriend.com/retreat. And you can also email us if you have any questions about that. Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments or things anybody would like to share tonight about what's come up for you, noticing your own blocks, listening to what other people have shared? Is there somebody unmuting herself?
Hello?
Hello, yes. Hi.
Hi, this is Genevieve. I have a question. So, what if, let's see, where do I start with this? So I've been in the process. I know you guys know, you had mentioned on your last call that some people have gone through Landmark, and I have been recently going through Landmark. So with my past ex, we were on and off for a few years, and through going through Landmark, it brought up a lot of things, and I ended up calling her and confronting her about a few things and kind of coming to the realization that for a while there, you know, we were just basically friends with benefits for a while there. And, you know, my last call with her, I kind of called to finalize things and just put things to rest. And you know, it turned out she had a girlfriend, and you know, I wished them the best, and which was perfectly fine, and just kind of ended things. But, you know, after I had hung up, you know, the girlfriend came after me, and it was immediately, oh, it's not okay to say what you said. And it's just this whole story around, you know, and I had told her what I had realized. I had realized that, you know, I was pretending the whole time to be okay with just, you know, with just the sex. Mm-hmm. And what I realized through everything was that, you know, I did actually love her, you know, and so that's a big reason why I just, you know, cut ties, because there was a lot of pain and insecurities and miscommunications and lies from the past. And so, you know, now I'm in the process of, I really am working on my self-worth and figuring out my boundaries and really coming into my own and just becoming a really strong individual. And I'm getting back out there on the dating scene, and I'm, you know, opening myself to love, even though, you know, I'm finding that, you know, that the purpose of life isn't not necessarily to, you know, to find that true love, but to really truly find your purpose in life. And if love comes along, that's great, you know. But what I'm noticing is, even though I'm starting to become content with myself and I'm starting to really just have a lot of confidence again, there's still this haunting in the back of my mind, and even subconsciously having, you know, dreams and of just, you know, these past girlfriends of hers trying to, you know, yell at me or come after me. And I just kind of had to leave that alone, you know, and just not feed into that negative energy. And, but it seems to come back in my subconscious mind in my dreams. So my question is, how, if you're starting to let go, you know, and I feel myself letting go, and or I have let go, but my subconscious mind is not letting me let go.
And what does it seem to be in your subconscious mind that, I mean, is it hurt that's coming up? Is it fear that's coming up? What's the feeling?
I think it's both. It's both. It's fear, it's hurt, it's betrayal. I think the biggest thing is betrayal, just because, you know, that wasn't the first time that it happened. And it didn't seem like this person really did anything to stop that from happening. It almost, you know, I don't know if it's just me creating stories in my head or not, but it almost seemed like it was encouraged, you know. And so I guess it's a mix. It's a mix of hurt, betrayal, and fear.
And so if you think that your ex-girlfriend did encourage her current girlfriend to come after you in that way, then what meaning are you making of that?
I guess, you know, my automatic response is the meaning that I make for myself is that I'm worthless or not worthy, or that, you know, I'm not strong enough.
Oh, okay. So it sounds like then that's the place to pay attention, you know, that maybe this is why the dreams are coming up, because it sounds like on a conscious level, you're more identified with the fact that you're, you know, you're growing, you're moving on, you know, you're ready to date again. But if there's still a part of you that thinks that the girlfriend may be encouraging her current girlfriend to come after you in this way means that you're not worthy, then that's something to really work with, because there's a big leap there. You know, however it is that it's getting constructed in your mind as evidence of your not worthiness, is definitely something to work with the Byron Katie questions or with the meta practice. Is this making sense?
Yes, I think so. What was the Katie questions? I'm sorry, I think I missed that.
The Byron Katie questions are the, is it true? Do I absolutely think it's true? What's bringing up when I think that thought, and who would I be without that thought?
Those are the four questions.
Right. And it's definitely not true. And I know that mm-hmm. not to be true. I know mm-hmm. it's a story that I mm-hmm. made up from whatever. You know, mm-hmm. But it's that initial feeling that comes
right.
up,
mm-hmm.
you
right.
know, yeah. and yeah. it's just getting past that.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with Ruth, and I think the meta practice can be a really a mm-hmm. nice way to cultivate compassion about, you know, what's happening when you feel that.
And also just, you know, putting a hand on your chest or wherever the feeling is when you wake up from one of these dreams and just saying, you know, just naming it fear mm-hmm. and then just reminding that part of yourself, you know, I am lovable. Mm-hmm. You are lovable. You are worthy. You know, I am worthy. I mean, you might feel like you're saying it to a younger part of yourself. You might feel like you're, you know, so that in that case, mm-hmm. you might say you are worthy. You know, you can say I am worthy. You can say we are worthy, including her with you, mm-hmm. however it feels right mm-hmm. to you. Because we're definitely, you know, I think the tricky thing with some of these practices is that we're not suggesting that you ignore the places of pain or fear. Right. It's important to acknowledge them with compassion and then do the redirect to the metta practice or, you know, mm-hmm. the greater understanding. So you're building those new pathways, but we're not suggesting that you, you know, just don't listen to the fear when it comes up. It needs to be heard for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing your story with us. And thank you. Thank you everybody else for taking part.
We're really glad that you showed up. It's nice to see our group as usual. So we have a few spots left for the roadmap class. So just go to consciousgirlfriend.com/roadmap.
And do sign up before Monday so that you can
sign up before Sunday. Sign up by Saturday night.
That would be the
email.
Ideal.
Yeah, because the email, first email for the course goes out on Sunday. So it'd be ideal if you signed up before Saturday.
Karen says, I think Eve had a question. Did you have a question, Eve?
Let me unmute you. What happened? I tried to unmute you. Let me try again. I'm sorry, Eve. Type it in. For some reason it's not allowing me to unmute you. I don't know why that is.
Maybe she can unmute herself.
Candace
says, I keep seeing a hand go up.
We don't see any hands.
Hmm.
It seems like it's been a little bit glitchy tonight. Zoom is sometimes a bit glitchy, but
we can't.
We can't seem to unmute you.
We can't see a hand, and we can't seem to unmute Eve. But Eve, you can, let's see.
In the chat.
Is there anything in the chat? Okay.
Well, sorry, Eve, about that. That's a little weird.
Yeah. Eve, if you want to say something, or if anybody else has a question about the roadmap or the retreat or any other quick question, feel free. And otherwise, we will end here. It was fun having the class be a little bit more interactive tonight. So at least I had a good time.
We'll try and do more of
that in the future. Give you some exercises to do so it's not just us sitting here and talking. But thank you all so much for being part of this community. We really appreciate, you know, getting this chance to come together with you lesbians and queer women wanting to date wisely and love well.
So, all right. So bye for now.
Lots of love.
Yeah. Lots of love to you. Have a great night.
Okay. Good night.
Bye.